the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. Dr. Mohler is president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary and one of the nation's leading theologians and cultural commentators. To get online with Dr. Mohler, call toll-free nationwide, 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Now, here's your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Albert Mohler Program. The news story out of Canada is so bizarre you think it's a parody, but it's not. Here's the bottom line of the story. A judge in Canada has ruled that a 12-year-old girl was excessively punished by her father when he forbade her to go on a class trip because of intentional internet misuse. She disobeyed her father, and she took her father to court, and she won. It is hard to imagine a more chilling precedent when it comes to parental rights and the integrity of the family. The story is actually just so transparently strange that it's hard to believe any kind of case like this would ever get to court or any legitimate judge would even give a hearing to the case, but it did happen. And it has created a furor throughout Canada and now spreading, of course, to the United States. Our neighbor to the north has been involved in a little more progressive way than many American states in an experiment in redefining the society and the family. I've been watching this with many others with great concern, but it certainly looks like what we have here is a precedent that will lead to disaster. We're going to be talking about it today on the Albert Mohler Program. The bottom line here is that the court has undermined a parent. And we're not talking here about some life or death decision. We're not talking about one of these cases in which a parent is saying no to medical treatment that is being called for by medical authorities. We're not talking about a situation in which a child is claiming any kind of abuse or anything like that. There's none of that. It's simply the fact that the girl was grounded and told she couldn't go on a camping trip with her school because she had posted pictures of herself. Now get this, on an internet dating site against her father's command. She disobeyed her father. Her father grounded her, said she couldn't go on this trip. She took her father to court, and she won. Now, just imagine the precedent that sets. Just imagine the message that sends across the culture. Just imagine what that means for family life. Are we watching the government now say, we will parent your children? We will contravene your decisions? We will come in and unground a grounded pre-adolescent? This is the kind of thing we have to discuss, because while it is going on in Canada, and it's very tempting to think, well, there's an important international border that separates that society from ours. Don't fool yourselves. The legal precedents are building on this side of the border as well. We'll be talking about how and why this issue has now come to this point. We're going to be talking about why the courts have been moving in this direction and why there are many who want to push them in that direction. We're going to be talking about how parents can be involved in trying not only to understand this issue, but to make a difference. And we're going to be talking about it today on the Albert Mohler Program. To join the discussion, give me a call at 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. First, to review some other issues in the news. More levees have broken on the Mississippi River. And as we are prayerfully concerned with so many people there in America's heartland, we understand that there are communities, towns, entire counties that are now underwater. America's disaster relief resources are being stretched. And the reality is that unlike watching a hurricane, which takes some time but is rather fast in terms of its impact, you're looking here at a problem that could grow as indeed that water system now and rainfall begins to move not only in states such as Wisconsin and Iowa and Illinois, but along the Mississippi River Basin. And the cities and towns all along the Mississippi River are watching warily as all of this builds. And there are many brave souls, many fine organizations, churches, denominations out there with disaster relief. And there are calls now for more. And there may be an opportunity for you or for your church group to have an impact, not only in terms of the urgency of what's taking place with this disaster building, but with the aftermath. It's one of the great lessons of Katrina. It's not only important to be there in the immediate aftermath, but looking at a disaster of this scale for some time to come. This is also a reminder to us that we take a great deal for granted. For instance, the fact that in America we have cheap grain, relatively inexpensive food. You're looking here at something that farmers understand and the rest of us have to look back in amazement about. And that is the fact that the very richness of the soil of the Great Plains is due to flooding. In other words, periodic flooding, just like with the Nile Delta in terms of the most fertile area of the ancient world, you're looking here at the fact that the swollen rivers, overflowing rivers, are the depositors of silt that amount to fertilizer that make that rich soil. And farmers are accustomed to the fact that they're going to have many good years, but they're going to be interrupted by the flooding that will take place. This is going to lead to some shortages, certainly higher prices, a different futures market for these commodities, especially grains, with wheat and corn being chief among them. One agricultural expert with the U.S. Department of Agriculture said that much of the corn crop has been washed away at a very strategic point in the germination of that crop. But something else to remember here is that not only do you have farmers out there who understand this perhaps better than others, you have all of those who live in those communities and villages. There are houses, stores, schools, churches that have been inundated with water, and there are thousands of people away from their homes. And even in the aftermath of Katrina, we came to understand something of the human scale of the disaster. We need to keep our eyes and our hearts directed very much to the heartland of this country as this is going on there. There's a lot going on in terms of technology just in recent days with Apple Computers releasing its plan for the new generation iPhone. A lot going on in terms of expectation of major announcements in the technological field. It reminds us that there are people who think that technology will save us. Slate.com is out with a very interesting article by Ray Fishman, going back to the fact that there are many who think that the computer will save education. I'm speaking here as an educator. Computers are a magnificent technology. I'll tell you the truth, I'm seldom far away from one. I have an iPhone in my pocket that goes along with me. I'm surrounded by computers, but you know what? Computers do not make us smarter. Computers can make a lot of data accessible to us, but there are those who have believed for a long time that the way to solve educational problems is to get computers in the hands of people, in particular the one laptop per child movement that has sought to create a $100 laptop that could be subsidized and made available to children in poorer areas of the United States and around the world. And yet it turns out that when you give poor kids laptops, it doesn't improve their scholastic performance, but they certainly do love the machines. In other words, they're not being used primarily for educational purposes. And who can be surprised by that? I mean, you give, regardless of the economic situation, you give a child a computer. And my guess is most of them do not think first of math. Now, they're thinking of something else. And lest their parents look upon them in a judgmental sense, I don't think their parents are probably first thinking of math either. You're thinking of all the things that you can do on a computer. These $100 laptops could be used for math lessons, or they can be used for video games, computer-based games. They can be used for a serious discussion with an educator, a teacher, and a student, or they can be used for instant messaging or anything else. These subsidized computing resources turn out not to be the key, it is now understood, to helping these children grow up to be very agile in the 21st century job market. It'll be interesting to see where this goes, but it does remind us that on recurring themes, you have different surges and seasons where people come along and say, look, here is the answer to the educational problem. It's a technology. It's a new program. It's a seminar. It's a conference. It's a this. It's a that. You know, the reality is that education still comes back to someone teaching and someone learning. And it's just as simple in the end as that. Meanwhile, with the new diagnostic manual for mental disorders and other things going on right now in terms of its preparation, every successive edition of the DSM volume adds more in terms of what are understood to be psychiatric and psychological diseases. Now, internet addiction is one of those that is almost certain to find its way into diagnosis and definition as a clinical disorder. Here is what is defined, according to the Telegraph of Great Britain, that's a major London newspaper, as the symptoms of internet addiction. Listen to this. They forget to eat and sleep. They need more advanced technology or more hours online as they develop resistance to the pleasure given by their current system. If they are deprived of their computer, they experience genuine withdrawal symptoms. And in common with other addictions, the victims also begin to have more arguments, to suffer fatigue, to get lower marks in tests, and to feel isolated from society. Now, the reality is that if you start thinking about those symptoms, my guess is that there are millions and millions of millions of Americans who would qualify as being internet addicted, who do not think themselves afflicted with a clinical disorder, who are now being counted among those who desperately need help. That gets to one of the mottos of our therapeutic society. You're either in therapy or you're in denial. That's the way to look at it. If you don't think you have an affliction, it's because you're afflicted with the affliction that leads you to be deluded in thinking you have no affliction. And if you are afflicted by that thought, let me suggest that all you have to do is go to your computer and Google it. And you can find out about the affliction of computer addiction, but you risk addiction to the affliction as you go. When we come back, we'll be talking about this court decision in Canada that sends a chilling precedent about parental rights, or talk about the integrity of the family. Give me a call at 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. Coast to coast and with listeners around the world, you're listening to the Albert Mueller Program.
The Superior Gold Group, a precious metals firm, is proud to sponsor the Albert Mueller Program. You can get more information about buying gold at 866-432-8656.
Welcome back to the Albert Mueller Program. When you live in an environment rich and surrounded by news reports, one of the problems is that you get a good many stories that turn out to be less than they first appear. You also find that there are people who have something like what you might call prank stories embedded in even the mainstream media. So you've always got to take a look. There are some sites that will run stories that we would never discuss on this air, on this program, on the air, because we would just not trust the authority. And that's what I thought I was dealing with when I saw a headline about a 12-year-old girl taking her father to court to get ungrounded in Canada. But it's not. As a matter of fact, the mainstream media is hot on this story now. The Washington Post ran it this morning, a news release from Reuters News Service. The Globe and Mail, which is the largest circulated paper in Toronto, Canada's largest city, has run with it, and now it's all over the place. Let me just read to you from the news coverage at the Globe and Mail in Toronto. The story says this. First, the father banned his 12-year-old daughter from going online after she posted photos of herself on a dating site. Then she allegedly had a row with her stepmother, so the father said the girl couldn't go on a school trip. The girl took the matter to court and won what lawyers say was an unprecedented judgment. Madam Justice Suzanne Tessier of the Quebec Superior Court ruled on Friday that the father couldn't discipline his daughter by barring her from the school trip. The judge ruled, as I will now summarize the case, that this was an excessive punishment. As I wrote at my website at albertmueller.com in an article published overnight entitled Another Chilling Precedent, A Court Undermines a Parent, this particular judgment should send chills down every parent's spine. The ruling is so out of bounds that the news story is simply hard to believe. This 12-year-old girl sued her father in court, and the judge took her side, undermining the father's authority, deciding that the girl was excessively punished when her father told her she could not go on a school camping trip, because, first of all, she had broken rules for the use of the internet. Now, this is a judge that needs to be grounded and sent to her room. A 12-year-old girl violated rules. She disobeyed her father. Now, the rules, by the way, were clearly understandable. I mean, that's not even really important to this case in terms of the precedent, but let's just be clear. This is a father who said that his daughter couldn't post pictures of herself on the internet. I call that good fathering. That's good parenting. That's what a father should do. And this girl nonetheless defied and disobeyed her father, and she did this. And by the way, this was on a dating site. When you talk about dangerous activity for a 12-year-old girl, it's hard to imagine a more dangerous activity than a 12-year-old posting photographs of herself on a dating site online. Now, for years, we've been warned that the courts were poised to usurp parental authority. We have seen chilling judicial precedents and the encroaching reach of bureaucrats and government agents. Prophets like Philip Reif and Christopher Lash warned that the family was being stripped of its functions and replaced by an army of eager agents. Parents are supplanted by professionals who are experts in raising other people's children. The Canadian case is among the most chilling yet. The father is appealing the decision, even though the girl has already gone on the camping trip. The family is involved in a difficult divorce situation, but the father was granted custody. I'm glad to say that outrage over the judge's ruling is building in Canada. Lauren Gunter of Canada's National Post described the ruling, and I love this expression, as, quote, sputteringly enraging. Yeah, I think that's just about right. She drew particular attention to the fact that the girl's attorney explained that she took the case to court because it involved a school trip. Quote, "For me, that was really important." I'm reading here from Gunter's article. "For me, that was really important. So what? Just who are you? Are you the kid's parent? Are you a relative of any sort? No. So why then does your opinion matter? And if it does matter, how is court action appropriate? At most, even if you are a close relative, you are limited to calling up the dad and expressing your view that his punishment is over the top." This lawyer insisted that while the court was a last resort, the situation called for it. Quote, "This was not a question of going to the movies or not, or going online or not, because obviously I wouldn't have intervened in that." End quote. So just how is that obvious? It should have been obvious that you don't go to court over missing the camping trip either, but that doesn't seem to have dawned on this lawyer. She called the trip a rite of passage. What will be the next rite, then? A missed sleepover? Her first out-of-town volleyball tournament with a school team? I really appreciated that article. That's a little bit of common sense in the Canadian media. The logic of this ruling, however, is not limited to Canada. In 1970, almost 40 years ago, in 1970, a young lawyer by the name of Hillary Rodham wrote a law review article entitled Children Under the Law, in which she argued that minors should be treated as, quote, child citizens, end quote, who should, at least under some conditions, be able to challenge their parents in court over parental decisions. His father may win the appeal. We have to hope that he does. But the precedent at this point is set. I hope you are paying attention to this story. It should send chills down every parent's spine. I can't imagine anything more injurious to parental authority. Just imagine that message now being sent throughout the society, or about the integrity of the family. What's next? The child doesn't like the clothing? The child wants to complain that she's being sent to a Christian school? You can just imagine all the precedents that will build up from this. The phone number to join the discussion is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. On the line from Canada is Ron, listening on XM170. Go ahead, Ron.
Yes, I'm a pastor here in Western Canada. I think in addition to what you've been talking about last night, interestingly enough, our Senate has just passed legislation outlawing spanking, which is coming to the full House of Commons in the fall. And so that's just a very interesting chain of events. I just finished reading your blog. That's why I gave you a call. And how that impacts the church and being a pastor is also very significant. And I think in the long run, we're going to have to figure out, even as a church, how do we deal with this when the scriptures tell us one thing and now the law tells us something else? So the days ahead aren't necessarily rosy for us believers in the Lord. So I just wanted to share that this afternoon.
Well, Ron, I really appreciate that. And I appreciate the fact that you called as a pastor, because when it comes to discipline and the spanking of children, that's not just a theory. It's not just an idea that we can just say, well, that's been tried and now we can do something else. There are clear biblical principles involved here concerning a parent's responsibility to discipline a child, not to mention the pragmatic observational data that comes to us when we see undisciplined children. Will it be the case that a Canadian Christian parent obeying the scripture and spanking a child is going to be brought to the bar of justice? You just have to wonder about that. And now what happens when you have a Christian family whose normal and reasonable discipline decisions are being taken to court? You know, how does a church handle this? Ron, I have to tell you, I have, as a pastor and as a theologian, I think you're on the front line here, and it sounds like you feel that way as well.
It's not going to be an easy situation, and I think it's just going to get worse in our culture. And we're a little, I'm not sure you would call it further ahead in Canada, maybe further behind, but you in the U.S., you'll face this eventually as well. But we're on the cutting edge of this, and I'm not sure where this is all going to go, but we could use your prayers.
Well, you will certainly have them, Ron, and I certainly could have used your call today. It was very helpful to hear from you, and having a first caller on this issue from Canada, someone who's on the front line, is very helpful. By the way, Ron, a pastor from Canada, mentioned this bill passed by the Canadian Senate. It needs House approval to be made into law, although that is now expected, according to authorities. It proposes to eliminate Section 43 of Canada's criminal code, which allows parents, teachers, and caregivers to use reasonable force to discipline a child and to correct their behavior. According to the one who sponsored this bill, routine discipline and using spanking as a premeditated punishment wouldn't be allowed. There is the army of experts coming in to tell you how to raise your children. You don't like the punishment as a kid? Take your parent to court. In Canada, evidently, it looks like that's fair game. But don't feel secure south of the border, because the logic of that precedent, it's operational here as well. The phone number is 877-893-8255, 877-893-TALK. This is the Albert Mueller Program.
listening to the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. To get online, call toll-free 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Or go to www.albertmohler.com. Here again is your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Welcome back to the Albert Mohler Program. The topic of today's conversation is this court case in Canada. That's the occasion, the catalyst for the conversation. But the setup for it is so understandable. If you are a parent or a child or know anything about family life, here you have a father who said, "Thou shalt not post pictures of thyself on the internet." And a 12-year-old girl nonetheless did. She got caught. She was grounded. She then had some parents would call an attitude problem, and she was grounded some more. She was told she couldn't go on a class trip that had been a big priority for her, and she took her dad to court, and she won. A court ruled that the father's punishment was excessive. I mean, if that doesn't scare you, I don't know what would. Here you have a court. You have a judge, a madam judge in Quebec, who says, "That was excessive, Dad. She's going to go on the trip." Now, just imagine the precedent here. I can't think of an adolescent who wouldn't at some point have the thought, "Well, okay, I'll hire an attorney." I mean, if that's the message being sent by the culture, it's just a recipe for disaster. I want to know what you think about it. The phone number is 877-893-8255. We're not thinking here merely as people who believe the family's a good idea. This is the place for intelligent Christian conversation. We believe that the family has a unique role, and that parents have a special responsibility and authority because that's the way the Creator intended the family for our good. It's not just a question for us of prudence. It's a question for us of faithfulness. The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK in Salt Lake City, Utah. Dave's listening on XM170. Go ahead, Dave.
Yeah, Dr. Mohler, I just wanted to say very briefly that the problem that we have here was obviously pre-existing in this family, evidenced by the fact that the girl even thought about going to the law, even thought about hiring a lawyer. My children would have never thought of that.
You know, Dave, I really want to agree with you. I do. And in a sense, I actually do agree with you in the sense that I think most children understand that their parents love them, and understand that parental discipline is a matter of the exercise of that love. And one of the things I try to remind parents about is that consistent biblical discipline actually builds the self-confidence of the child. But on the other hand, let me tell you something that was told me just in the last month. A father told me that he had a 12-year-old son, 12 or 13, I don't remember which, who was clearly out of line. And he took the boy in the bedroom to administer parental discipline, we would all understand. And the boy said, "Dad, at school they told us you're not supposed to do this." Now, you know, you just take an impressionable kid, you just have to wonder what went on in school. You know, how did that message get implanted? I think a lot of parents are unaware of what's going on in terms of the messages being sent to their children. But Dave, you're right. I mean, there clearly are some problems here. But I have to say, I respect a father who appears to have put all the right structures in place in terms of the rules about the internet, and somehow he had the knowledge of what was going on. So you have some ongoing fathering going on here that appears pretty impressive to me. But you do have a broken home situation. And so your point's well taken. There's probably a pathology here, but I'm more concerned with the precedent. I really appreciate your call from Salt Lake City, Utah, from Louisville, Kentucky, listening on WFIA. We have Robert on the line. Go ahead, Robert.
Yeah, I just want to say I agree that the courts have no right to step into a parent's ability to discipline their child. If it was abuse, that's one thing. But to restrict them from privileges, the court has no right to do that.
All right, Robert, let me just ask you, isn't it abuse to say this girl can't go on a camping trip?
No.
Okay, well, thank you. But let's just say that that the girl says it's abuse. Does that change anything?
No.
Okay, it doesn't to me either. So you have to wonder, where's the insanity of a judge saying, "Yeah, looks like a problem to me"? I just cannot imagine the arrogance and audacity of a judge sitting on a court having a 12-year-old plaintiff saying, "My dad grounded me from this trip." And then to have the girl's attorney, which in the Canadian system is an agent of the court provided for the girl in this situation because of the marital breakup of her parents, to have the lawyer say, look, this is really important. I think this is really important. And to use the language that I cited in my article in which she said, concerning her own judgment, she said, for me, that was really important. I really love Lorne Gunter's article now in Canada's National Post when we had the response, so what? Just who are you? Are you the kid's parent? Are you a relative of any sort? No. So why then does your opinion matter? You know, why does this judge's opinion matter? Well, it's because society has invested the judiciary with certain authority, which is misused in this case. Folks, the great warning here is that the encroachment is happening incrementally. When we come back, we'll try to trace that trend. The phone number is 877-893-8255. I'm Albert Mohler.
The Superior Gold Group, a precious metals firm, is proud to sponsor the Albert Mohler Program. You can get more information about buying gold at 866-432-8656.
Welcome back to the Albert Mohler Program. The precedent in Canada is getting a lot of attention, and well, it should, because it sounds like the setup for some kind of, primetime sitcom. Here you have a 12-year-old girl who takes her father to court because she's been grounded from a school trip. But it turns from a sitcom to drama and tragedy when you find out that the court heard her care, her cry, her plea, and took her case, and judge ruled in her favor. It's simply incredible. You start looking at this. The phone number to join the conversation is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. You know, let me kind of trace the development of this issue. When you go back to the 1940s, 1950s, it's not apparent that the rights and integrity of the family are being encroached upon very much, although they were even then. The 20th century was a time of incredible social change in America. And one of the phenomena that really has to be watched there is the phenomenon of the rise of the expert. And the great symbol of that is the publication of the book on child and baby care by Dr. Spock, Dr. Benjamin Spock. That was the first time you had kind of a recognized expert. And Dr. Spock, by the way, was against spanking. It was a very progressive, liberal vision of parenting. And you really have, in the case of Dr. Spock, above the water line of the iceberg, what people didn't see was what was underneath. An entire army of experts, government agents and others, who were determined to make decisions on behalf of parents and to change the way that the family is organized. And just realize the fact, just think about this for a moment. If you're going to join that team, it's unlikely you're going to hold to a very conservative worldview. That just doesn't fit. You wouldn't join the team if that were not the case. That's why when you go into these professions, you tend to find people who have an agenda to redefine the family. Christopher Lash, Philip Reif, two of the most incisive observers of what was going on in the last half of the 20th century, described an army of experts replacing parents in terms of authority. You now have not only the pediatrician that is, of course, qualified to speak of the child in medical terms, you have pediatricians that begin to talk about how parents ought to discipline their children. You have the American Academy of Pediatrics right now with position statements in favor of same-sex marriage. And you want to say, what does that have to do with tonsillitis and the measles? Well, it has nothing to do, but it has everything to do with the expansion of what is considered professional expertise at the expense of parents. Then you have social workers, and you have caseworkers, and you have lawyers, and you have the courts, and then you have educators who see the public schools. And if you don't understand this, you're missing what really is going on in the debate over the public schools. There is a debate in the public schools over reading and writing and arithmetic, but that is not the big issue. The big issue is, what are the schools for? Are they there for education, or are they there for the formation of children? And increasingly, they're there for the formation of children. You have educators who want to replace parents. What is the agenda behind so much of this education in terms of even early childhood education? Not only Head Start, but Head Start to Head Start and all the rest, and the after-school education? I read a position paper about a year ago in which an educational group said, look, we need to have children 12 months a year. We need to have them beginning as soon as we can, even as early as age 2 or age 3. We need to have them for 12 to 15 hours a day. Guess what you've done? You've created a replacement for the family. If that's successful, you have replaced parents. And there are people who think that's exactly what needs to happen. Because what you see reflected in this precedent in Canada is what is deeply embedded in the professional culture of the United States, and that is that parents are basically repressive. That parents basically parent the way they were parented, repeating what are understood to be the mistakes of their parents. That parents aren't experts. That parents aren't child psychologists. They're not psychiatrists. They're not pediatricians. They're not trained professional educators. It's really amazing. You know, I'll tell you an anecdote. I don't think my wife or son would mind me mentioning here because it's become a major topic of some chuckles in my family. Christopher was, I guess, 13 or 14 years old, and we were homeschooling, and my wife was teaching him in a field, and Christopher just looks at her with an innocent look on the face and says, "Are you certified to teach this?" Which led to an interesting mom-son moment that got translated into a father-son moment. It wasn't an antagonistic question. It was just that here you have, a 12, 13-year-old boy who had bought into the logic of professional certification. The logic, by the way, that led to the anti-homeschooling decision by the California Supreme Court. It's almost like he was reading their brief as a 12-year-old before they ever wrote it. The very fact that his mother was a summa cum laude graduate in the field should have been enough. But she doesn't have a certification in it. She doesn't need it. I would think that a summa cum laude degree would be enough certification. But you know why she doesn't have certification? Because in order to have certification, you have to go through the education program, which is all about changing the way people think about the function of education. You know, when you think about the integrity of the family, let's go back to the fact that what you have here is a case in which, and the facts of the case are just so, well, sputteringly apparent, to quote, paraphrase, the article from the Canadian newspaper. It's just one of those things you look at and you say, how can this happen? How can a 12-year-old girl have the right to take her father to court? And what sane judge would accept the case? And then what sane judge would take the case and then rule in favor of a 12-year-old girl? You know, here's a question I want to ask this judge. Are you going to be there when this girl gets into trouble on the internet? Are you going to be there to undo the damage? Are you going to be there to feed her every day? Are you going to be there to clothe her? Are you going to be there to sit by her bedside when she's sick? Are you going to be there to help get her ready for the next grade? Are you going to be there to stay up late at night doing her homework with her? Are you going to be there when she's hurt and depressed? Are you going to be there in the great highlight moments of her life? No, you're only there to interfere with her life, with her father. You are only there, Madam Judge, in order to subvert this father's authority. You were only there in order to make some kind of point you had no right to make. I think it will take some time for most parents to understand why these precedents are so important. It's so easy to look at a case like this and say, that's Canada, it's a long way away, it's not my family. Folks, precedents allowed to stand become precedents that influence future decisions, that encourage policymakers that want to push in this direction, that become cited by other courts. This is an international court. Just look at how many American court decisions right now cite international precedents. And you'll have another chill down your spine. Back with final thoughts in just a moment. You're listening to the Albert Mueller Program. Welcome back to the Albert Mueller Program. We will be watching the development of this case in Canada as this father appeals the case. We have to hope he wins, and we'll be watching similar precedents here in the United States as well. I want to tell you, there are some fascinating things out there in the media, but few, I think, are as fascinating as the article by S.T. Karnick in Salvo Magazine entitled "Girly Men, the Media's Attack on Masculinity." And this is really fascinating stuff, just talking about how masculinity is being sidelined, made just a matter of crude humor and all the rest, and basically denied by a feminized culture. S.T. Karnick is writing about the fact that TV's new primetime schedule is intentionally, quote, according to the Associated Press, putting the softer side of men on display. Men, We're the new women, says Dylan McDermott, speaking about a new primetime television schedule for the fall. Karnick cites Christina Hoff Summers, pointing out that the energy, competitiveness, and corporal daring of normal, decent males is responsible for much of what is right in the world. We began this program with a story that wasn't a parody but sounded like one. I'm going to end by speaking of what was published with this article, which is a parody, but is frighteningly close to the truth. It's an advertisement for medication. Now, remember, right now, 6 out of 10 males, young males, aged 9 to 15, in the New York City public schools has been offered a prescription for Ritalin. Here is an advertisement. It looks like a medical advertisement. It's for a product called E-MASQL8+. Here's what it asks. Does your son act too much like a little boy? Is he fidgety and rambunctious? Does he have trouble listening or have a puerile sense of humor? Is he easily distracted? Does he have a propensity to get dirty? Does he enjoy playing with violent toys? And you got to see the picture. This kid is a shirtless little boy looking wildly into the camera. Goes on and says, if your son acts too much like a little boy, he may have any number of syndromes, and what he needs is E-MASQL8+, the new medication, the cure for the common boy. Well, the drug is Emasculate Plus, and that's exactly what some people would like to have take place. I love this because it communicates all the right things. Asking the question, does your son act too much like a little boy, is like asking, what do you think he's supposed to be in the first place? We live in a society that is so confused about the most fundamental things. When an advertisement like this, which is a farce and is a parody, is funny because it is so frighteningly close to the truth, it tells us a great deal about where we are. When a court case like this happens in Canada and you read it and you think it must be a parody and you find that it's not, it tells you that many of our worst fears are already being realized. This is the place for intelligent Christian conversation. We'll be tracking these issues with you. As you see issues we ought to know about and talk about, send them to me at albertmuller.com. I'll meet you next week for intelligent Christian conversation. This is the Albert Mueller Program.
Thanks for listening, and be sure to visit our website, www.albertmuller.com. You'll find archives of past shows and other important resources. You can also email your questions and comments. That's www.albertmuller.com. Be sure to join us next time for the Albert Mueller Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter.